Welcome to Compliance Pointers, where we take an in-depth look into the latest news, trends, and challenges surrounding information security, privacy, and marketing compliance. Let's dive in with your host, Jordan Eisner.
All right, welcome back. Another episode of Compliance Pointers. If you listened to our previous episode on ISO as a catalyst, not a checkbox.
Let's call it a prereq to this video.
Prereq?
You gotta watch it.
But not a requirement.
I know pretty hard requirement.
David's just going for it. That doesn't mean don't listen to the rest of this.
Yeah.
If you haven't listened to that one, they
but
are
maybe go back.
They're not codependent. You know,
I would say they're correct.
It's kind of like the future of 27001 and 27701. Right. Oh. They're going to be independent of one another.
That's not good for sales. We're not bundling that anymore. But yes, you're right.
But if you heard that episode, you knew that we're going to be talking about 42001 with David in the studio in the same exact outfit. That's because we're doing it the
same day. This has not been washed since that last video.
No. Yeah. I haven't even showered since our last podcast. So hopefully they're not more than a week apart.
And I was sweating a little bit coming into today's studio.
Nervousness. AI makes you nervous, like me.
It's actually excitement, just excitement sweats.
Right. Yeah, there we go. Two types of sweats. Which one smells worse, excitement or nervousness?
I'd probably say excitement.
I think they're the same, man. Right? It's anxiety either way, either excited or, dreading.
Fair.
I'm joined again by David Foreman, CEO of Mastermind, a leader in ISO certification. In fact, only the first company in the U.S. to focus solely on ISO certifications. They offer certification services around 27001 and the, I know it's not called amendments or
Extensions.
The extensions, 2717 and 2718.
You got it.
Right?
Yeah.
And also 27701.
Yep.
Stay tuned for updates on that, maybe come September.
Probably.
On the requirements around it as they move to a new version, the 2025 version. But also ISO 42001, which is going to be the topic of today's. I like to brag on David. He always corrects me on the exact numbers. But there was a point in time where, you know, half the 42001 certifications were issued by Mastermind.
You make it seem like that was so long ago. That was like
it wasn't
last
that long
month
ago, right?
So we could verify that.
That's right, and that's part of the topic today too. You've done a lot of them. You have plenty of experience in there. Probably leading, you know, in the U.S. And probably globally. But the topic of this podcast is why are we still waiting for the starting gun? You know, why are people or organizations, I should say, hesitating to get into it? I think you were even going to call out some specific companies, maybe not. Maybe you slept on that and decided not to.
Oh, no, I'll call them out.
There you go.
Good. I slept on it and thought of more companies I wanted to call out.
There you go. Well, I mean, it's not going anywhere. It's everywhere. It's the future. You can't deny it. I'm interested in this podcast and discussing how 42001 fits into the AI landscape. You talked about 42006 in a previous episode we did together. I assume that's a connection.
They're connected in terms of like how you perform the certification audits.
Okay.
Yes.
So you can add color on that as you want. And then, you know, just last Friday, Real Time with Bill Maher came back and they had a guest on. I watch it. I like it.
Watch your video link.
And he's talking about runaway AI and I forgot his name. Travis something or Trevor something, but talking about even some of the top LLMs and in scenarios where you tell them it's going to be self-preservation, it's going to be replaced.
Yeah,
80-90% of the time, and I didn't fact check any of this. 80-90% of the time, it's actively looking for ways to circumvent that replacement, even to the point of crawling organization emails to look for blackmail material.
Yep, exactly.
I didn't fall asleep as easy. That night.
It's called a model hallucination.
You know, watching that. Okay, yeah. So we're going to get into that. So stay tuned. You know, don't drop off just because you didn't watch the other episode, like David said. We're going to keep going back and forth
We
on
should
that.
Put a link in the chat for that one, too.
There you go.
It was a good video. Yeah.
So let's start. How would you describe the current AI landscape from a standards and a regulatory lens?
Yeah, so we're obviously very familiar with 42001 at this point. That came out in December of 2023. And it kind of,
man, that. It's almost 2 years old.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
It's still lack of adoption, in my opinion.
Right,
so,
came
out right around the same time as the EU AI Act as well. EU AI Act was actually leaked that same month, and it was kind of a controlled leak where you could see
this.
The draft. It started having kind of rolling enforcement dates throughout 2024. If you think about it, I guess aside from the kind of those two like more pivotal events, in the U.S., our local market here, we had back in July the big beautiful bill that got passed, and there was it got introduced then, and there was this idea of basically creating some sort of regulatory sandbox or moratorium where we would kind of have stabilized AI regulation across all states in the country to allow for some innovation to happen around AI. So there's this kind of debate happening right now where big tech, you know, the Metas, the Googles, the Microsofts of the world are fighting these regulators, especially in the EU where the EU AI Act popularized. And they're saying like, hey, like we're moving too quickly on some of this technology. There's a lot of unknowns around it. There could be abuses to it. There could be ethical violations. There could be harms to individuals, societies, depending on how that AI is utilized. There could be bias, racial discrimination, that kind of thing. And therefore, we need to kind of like pump the brakes a little bit and so we can wrap our hands around it and figure out like exactly how can we utilize this technology in a safe way. At the same time, you have some sides of the house, private sector, some government individuals as well, that want to utilize AI as a mechanism to, I'll say, innovate, create business, but also get ahead kind of in, I'll say, comparative economies.
Absolutely.
And so I think you have these kind of like two sides that one's looking at it from a safety standpoint, one's looking at it more opportunistic.
Right.
And you have to kind of come to a common ground there.
Absolutely.
And so what we see right now, a kind of current state of the U.S. environment, we really only have one state that's done anything impactful here so far, at least come out and made official law around it, and that's the state of Texas. So I had to look it up right before this episode to make sure I had the acronym right, because I know some Spanish and it always confuses me, but it's called TRIGA. TRIGA. Okay. T-R-A-I-G-A is the Texas law. If Spanish speakers listening to this, they know kind of where my head went immediately with that. But looking at TRIGA, there is now this kind of idea of a regulatory sandbox where companies that are AI developers or deployers, they have the opportunity through an approval process that's overseen by the state attorney general and their Department of Information Resources, if I'm correct there, where they can apply to a specific program that has basically special exemptions. And so they can do this kind of like crazy R&D and kind of do it under this like form of safe harbor and not get in trouble with regulators should like there be hallucinations that you just talked about around self-preservation, there be certain abuses to certain individuals, that kind of thing.
Sort of established as like a safe harbor form.
In a form. Additionally, Texas also has a kind of related AI act around child pornography as well, which we have to be real. It's an issue with the use of this type of technology. And the pornography industry is one of the first always to innovate when this type of stuff comes out. So when we saw multimodal get popularized here in the last couple of years, like it was one of the first to kind of adopt it as well. And so Texas now has specific provisions now through its own individual law around child pornography and the use of AI along with that as well.
That's a good thing. I thought maybe you'd say Colorado for the AI.
So Colorado definitely been first mover, especially on privacy side, but also I'm very familiar with this too, with like workplace protections as well. So there's a number of states that have introduced bills. They just haven't made them all the way to law per se. I think the child pornography one, if I'm correct on this, for Texas, it goes into force here in September, so coming up. And then the larger TRIGA law that starts going into force in January of this next year. So there's always got to be kind of a notice then adoption period here
gotcha.
As well. Yeah.
And you might have said this, and I missed it. It's governing businesses in Texas, businesses that do business in Texas.
Good question. In terms of like the jurisdiction there,
yeah.
All I know, like for fact, I had to look this up, but I know that AI deployers and developers are the ones that are covered here. I'm assuming it's anyone that does business in Texas.
Okay.
It'd be probably similar to like the EU AI Act, whereas anyone who does business with the EU, but you don't necessarily have to be based in the EU.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. Shifting gears, you already hinted at this a little bit.
Sure.
What are you seeing in terms of 42001 adoption?
Yeah.
ISO, right? Shifting back to the framework itself and not necessarily the regulations, state or federal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first of all, I don't want to mix like ISO 42001 too much with like statutes, regulations, laws. There's an idea in all these ISO standards and management system standards where we're talking about conformity assessments. And in fact, the formal term for a certification body like Mastermind is actually called a CAB, a conformity assessment body. If you know these definitions, these like very special technical terms, conformity is different from compliance. And compliance is what you would have to basically say I'm abiding or aligning with like a certain law, statute, or regulation.
Okay.
So in all reality, 42001 isn't a mechanism to like certify yourself or self-attest yourself to the AI Act and have a safe harbor there. Utilizing that term again, yet there's a lot of terms in the space. But talking about a little bit more of the adoption trends we're seeing. First of all, best data we have right now is 56. 56 total companies have certified 42,001 as the date of this recording. Okay. Okay. However, some of the analytics data that's available on the back end of the global database called IAF Cert Search that we can see here as a certification body, it has not been updating correctly for about the past month. So the number will be larger than that ultimately. But okay. That was the last update we saw that had any sort of, I'll say, reliance or integrity.
What's the movement been on that? Yeah. You know, where was that in January?
Good question. In January, we were in the teens. Like, it was very, very small in January of this year. It's been basically a March forward.
Over about half
a
year.
March forward, we started seeing some acceleration. There was really only, I think, as of January, I'm going to make sure I'm correct on this, I think it was four, maybe five certification bodies globally that had accreditation to actually do these audits. Since then, we've had some larger ones get the accreditation. For example, SGS, they're one of the top three in the world. So they now have that accreditation. They actually have dual accreditation through both Singapore and through the U.S. bodies as well.
But who was first?
First was Mastermind back in July of 2024. With any, I'll say, early adopter, whether it be a certification body or certified organization, there's a little bit of a, I'll say, press that has to happen first, and then people start thinking about it, explore it. Then they adopt. Then they eventually go through an audit as well. So I would say we're starting to hit kind of our stride right now. The types of conversations I have with prospects.
In terms of 42,001 adoption, not Mastermind.
Exactly, 42,001, I'd say the prospect type calls I have around 42,001 specifically, I mean, they are 5x what they were this time last year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I think we're kind of touching on the fact of like this specific risk taxonomy being artificial intelligence. It's pertinent and relevant to so many organizations. Mm-hmm. Beyond our prior conversation around 27701 for privacy, maybe an organization says, hey, like, I really don't need to think about this too much because I'm like a joint sub-processor, like making up these terms. But I just like have very little like responsibility here. Like, therefore, I don't need to go certify my operations here.
Right.
Instead, with AI, there are different roles within 42,001. You could be a producer, which is, you know, kind of the most extreme here. I am open AI and I am controlling the foundational models all the way up to the LLM as a service. Or you could go all the way down to I'm just an AI user. I'm plugging in a ChatGPT to do part of my scope of work, but it doesn't affect any end customer. Every single role in between is relevant under 42,001 to some extent, and you could get certified.
Okay.
So
you have companies that are getting 42,001 certification, just maybe not you in particular,
sure.
Or maybe it is you in particular, but of the 56, there are companies that they're just leveraging AI, and so they want a certification.
Yeah, that exists.
About how they have a management system around that.
Yep, and we have certified organizations at Mastermind that that is their entire scope. It's like we have a ChatGPT team or ChatGPT enterprise license, and we want to certify our operations on how we manage that because they
are. So why do that? Sorry to kind of like inject in the middle of you answering that one question about adoption, but why would a company do that?
It's typically a company, and the use cases I'm thinking of, that have like a form of a corporate IT almost. So think of it as like a holdings company, and they're certifying the corporate IT environment, and then they require business units underneath them to basically intra-bill to use their services. Mm. And so they get certified for that reason, so they have a little bit
more. And
then
they're using a certification as a means to essentially good due diligence on
improve
how
cost center,
and how that's being, how those policies that they're stating around AI are being followed across their
correct.
IT
yeah,
units.
They use it as their baseline, and they say, "Why not certify it while we're doing it?" Yep,
absolutely.
It is a little bit more abnormal use case. Like, you know, typically we're talking about sales driven conversations for certification, an external interested party, not an external interested party that's still within the same larger holdings company.
But it goes back even to what we were talking about previously, right? Mm-hmm. Again, ISO and these standards not just being used as a checkbox to meet some sort of external pressure, but
completely.
To actually be used as a management system, whether it's around privacy, information security, AI, the coffee, like you mentioned in a previous episode, right? Manufacturing.
Another ISO standard that you see often used for that same type of use case is ISO 20,000-1, one we don't talk about much, but it's for IT service management. That standard got popularized more as an internal certification. So you see it often come up in like RFPs with the U.S. public sector. They'll require companies to say, hey, like, we want to make sure your IT operations are in like good shape too, and that if some issue arises, you have a way to manage that if you are going to be, you know, a vendor for the U.S. government, okay. For example.
Okay. Yeah. So 42,001 is being bifurcated that way. But when I think of it, and
this is definitely the less common use
case.
That's
what I'm saying. Yeah. I want to be careful there. Like, here's a company that's leveraging AI and their products or their services that they're offering in the marketplace, and they want this. So badge on there.
So let's talk about the like four most common roles. There are more than just four. There's an entire ISO standard that kind of dives deeper into those four. But the four that we always kind of like evangelize here at Mastermind is going from most rigid or rigorous all the way down to kind of the least impactful, that AI user we talked about. The most impactful is going to be that AI producer. That's your OpenAIs, your Anthropics, your Meta Llama 3s of the world, okay? Then you get into AI developer. Maybe they are utilizing one of those popular LLMs that we just talked about, or multiple of them, but they're doing some sort of fine tuning to it, maybe training of a model as well, creating a variant per se. So they have a little bit more, I'll say, of that shared responsibility matrix than just someone using an LLM out of the box.
Okay.
Then you have an AI provider. An AI provider says, hey, one or multiple third-party LLMs, so again, ChatGPT plus Anthropic, okay? And we're going to repackage it into our platform. An end user accesses our platform, is actually chatting with ChatGPT. They don't see it because it's white-labeled. And we had to make sure that that kind of provisioning of that service, AI provider, is controlled, okay?
Okay.
And then finally, AI user. AI user has no, like, third-party end user using it. It's just the own internal employees are using it as well. Now, this is a little bit debatable, this next point here. That 42,006 standard that just got published in July that we just talked about, it calls out an AI producer. It previously called an AI developer that has since been merged with AI producer in the final revision of it.
Hmm.
Calls out AI provider, calls out AI user, and then it calls out what they call multiple roles, okay? Well, I would argue any company that's maybe an AI provider, for example, that is repackaging LLM services, they probably are using it internally too, okay? Therefore, they're both an AI provider and AI user. I would argue that an AI developer that's doing some sort of training and fine-tuning models probably has elements of their platform, maybe a specific module or service, that's probably just an AI provider, not an AI developer as well. And their own internal employees are using AI. And I would definitely argue, as an AI producer, like, let's think of it, okay, like Google Gemini, Microsoft Copilot, own internal employees, also AI user.
Sure.
So technically speaking, is everyone multiple roles? No. I don't think that's how the standard was like written or intended.
Right.
So instead, I say, if you are one of these roles, provider, developer, or producer, you inherit the other roles underneath it as well. And that's how we've been approaching these
rolls
audits as well.
Okay.
Yep.
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Why 42,006 and not 2 or 3 or 4 or 5?
Sure.
Maybe that's an ISO question.
Yeah, kind of the numbering scheme on there. So those sixes, like 27,706, 27,006, and now 42,006, they traditionally have been what they call like the normative reference for the accreditation standard. So accreditation standard, that is essentially the auditors, the certification bodies like Mastermind, the rules we have to follow to go perform a certification audit for that scheme and that family. So in like simpler terms.
It's your management system.
It's criteria to influence our quality system, yes.
And
so it has like competency requirements for like AI auditors at Mastermind. It would have how you do a stage one, stage two. For initial certification, kind of what are your objectives. It will have audit time, which is always a controversial topic where it says, all right, based on the headcount or effective headcount or management system headcount of the organization to get certified, how many audit days do you need to plan for?
I've seen some of that.
Yep. So all that's normative or required under those standards. Yep.
So don't let me put words in your mouth, but it sounds like we're phasing out of the early adopter into – maybe the next stage, maybe it's still early. Or
yes and no.
Early-ish adopters?
We're early still.
Okay,
early. In all reality, how I know we're still early is almost every single one of our clients, not 100% of them, but most of them, they're asking, how do we publicize the achievement once we earn it? And that's a pretty unique conversation. I mean, I've been in the ISO space for a while, and I'll say 27701 when it was released in 2019. We had a few kind of first adopters back then at a prior company when they were – getting certified to 27701, they said, hey, how do we market this? Okay, we're definitely a first mover. And I'll say for 42001, same wave right now. And even though it's coming up on 2 years old here this December, I think the 42001 kind of industry, or I'll say interested parties, the people that would actually be applicable to that audience, I think they still find it having marketing differentiation. A lot of these ISO standards, unfortunately, they become table stakes over I'll say the long term, okay? Like ISO 27001, pretty popular worldwide now, okay? Even in the U.S. market where SOC 2 was kind of the original incumbent. With 42001, we are seeing not only like, hey, I'm the first in the world to get it. That was Aura Labs, July 2024. Awesome, at least under accreditation. Now we're seeing, you know, cloud service platforms where they're saying, all right, we're the first major like hyperscale to get it. Then you see some sector specific elements of it, like, hey, we're the first, you know, legal platform to have it.
Point made. A lot more first.
So a lot more first to be had.
And a lot more question around so how to market. Yeah. Okay. So what's delaying early into mass adoption?
I think with any of these standards, there's a network effect. I look at 27001 coming to the U.S. It came over really stateside in 2010. It wasn't the first one, but the first major company to adopt it, Amazon Web Services. Amazon Web Services, if you go pull down their 27001 certification, former employer of mine, they used to be a client of mine. They initially achieved 27001, and it was with EY Certified Point. They're still their auditor today, and that was in 2010. That was the first major one to get it. And then afterwards, basically the rest of the CSPs started getting it. And then that kind of infrastructure layer was certified. And so then you started having the platforms as a service. Then you started having the DBs as a service. Then you had SaaS providers. And now we have, you know, fresh new YC grads getting ISO 27001 certified in the first 2 months of existence. So I'd say that's table stakes at this point, right?
Right.
If you're a service
provider.
In terms of your question here, 42001, let's think of it like, let's brainstorm real quick, okay? So AI companies that should have 42001 from your point of view as a consumer, who?
Oh, I'm not the right person to ask about this.
No, what? Name an AI company.
You'd be surprised.
I would say like the one that we are using the most as a consumer, ChatGPT, right?
Yeah.
ChatGPT.
I wasn't even sure if that was the name of it or just the product.
That's not the company. It's the product. The company is OpenAI, Sam Altman. OpenAI notoriously does not have any ISO certification today. You can go to their trust center. It's online. It is flooded with SOC reports on there, okay? It's not saying they're good or bad. It's more of just saying it's interesting. You go look at Anthropic. They did get certified. To 27001 and 42001. That was not done by Mastermind. And Anthropic is currently under a pretty, I'll say, widely popularized legal battle right now with Reddit because Anthropic was scraping Reddit to train its models. And I'll say there are certain controls around data provenance within 42001 that would mean if that is true and that comes out, then they should not be certified right now.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, it's pretty objective. But it doesn't like say that the audit firm was bad or anything or it missed it. It's like it's a reality of like what a conformity audit is. It doesn't uncover 100% of things.
It's not compliance.
So I'll say some of the major LLM providers, I think a lot of eyes are on them, okay? So OpenAI, Anthropic, Perplexity, Meta, you have Google Gemini, you have Microsoft with Microsoft Copilot. Even Microsoft Copilot is not really like the LLM service. They hook into OpenAI, so you got to think of it from that lens. Then you have Amazon with Amazon Q and Amazon Bedrock. So Amazon, Bedrock, Amazon Q, they are certified. Microsoft Copilot, Copilot Chat, they are certified. Google Gemini, Gemini for Workspace, they are certified. But then when you get to these LLM providers that all they do is LLMs, like a Perplexity, like Meta for Llama 3, like Anthropic Claude. Well, actually, we were talking Anthropic. But there still seems to be kind of this wait-and-see game happening. And that's that infrastructure layer that I'm talking about earlier with 27001 adoption, especially in the U.S. market, creating that network effect. So in reality, the companies that are going for 42001 certification right now, a lot of them are AI providers. They're repackaging these services that are third-party LLMs through some sort of platform that's white-labeled and then being provided to an end user.
Interesting.
Which brings into an interesting scope conversation. is the service 42001 certified? Well, the part of the service that your vendor operates, yes, it is. Mm-hmm. But the models they're plugging into are not.
The origins, yeah.
And so theoretically, I would say there's very few services out there that end-to-end in that supply chain, that tech stack, is actually 42001 conforming.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So in all reality, once these LLMs as a service, for lack of a better word, start adopting the standard, I think it's going to hit quite the inflection point in terms of adoption.
Trickle down almost at that point. Okay. Now we'll get into some of the meaty stuff.
Sure.
Let's talk about AI hallucinations, runaway AI, self-preservation, et cetera, et cetera. How's 42001 addressing that and other safety or ethical concerns?
Yeah, so this conversation comes up pretty frequently with 27001 customers or certified clients and scopes that are trying to up-level into 42001. Basically like, hey, David, what's the net new requirements I need to be thinking about that are most impactful or the biggest common pitfalls in order for us to achieve 42001 certification? One of the biggest new themes, if I was to use that kind of colloquially, within 42001 compared to these other management system standards is this idea of an AI system impact assessment or assessments. And that system, when I say system impact assessment, is not the management system. It's every product or service and scope to that management system. So to answer your question specifically around like safety and kind of this whole idea of responsible use, that system impact assessment is supposed to drill down into areas like fairness, transparency, abuse, any sort of harm. And you're supposed to do your own sort of model testing in order to dictate when something is ready for like general availability. That's going to look different based on your role. So an AI producer, they're going to have to produce like a full-fledged model card or system card, which you can find publicly like OpenAI, if I've been picking on them this entire time, guess what? They actually are really good at detailing like their model like cards, as we would call it, in terms of how they test for like safety. Mm-hmm. You can go find it online. They call them system cards, not model cards. And they have them for all the major model releases. So GPT 4.5, they have them for 0304. And they have them for GPT-4 as well. So you can go find like exactly what type of testing we do. Like what percentage do we get like false positives, for lack of a better word.
How they're controlling for it and what are the results.
And then like where do we see the risk here? And like, you know, how do we determine that this model was ready for general availability and like, you know, regular use as well versus just like, you know, continued beta testing and research. And so I'd say that's where 42001 has its strength is these system impact assessments.
Okay.
Now, going to an earlier conversation we've had in prior episodes around competency, now you have to depend on these assessors, these auditors, these certification bodies to be able to accurately look at these system impact assessments and the methodology behind them and determine whether or not they're adequate or sufficient for the type of model that it's supposed to be reviewing or the service, depending on where that organization fits in those roles within 42001. And I would say that's probably the biggest heartache I have right now. I won't disclose the person here. I'll protect him. But I had a conversation with a leader and one of these accreditation bodies that we talk about pretty frequently, actually just yesterday. And they were telling me that one of the bigger issues that they see during witness audits these accreditation bodies perform of the certification body going into an organization actually certifying them is the auditors in the certification body do not know like the lines of questions, the inquiry procedures to go through to even assess an AI system impact assessment. And I think that's a huge knowledge gap right now.
So it's a competency question, right?
It's competency, but I'll be honest, even 42006, which drives competency, is pretty weak in this area in terms of like, it's like one bullet point understanding how a system impact assessment should work. So I think one of the biggest core principles of 42001 is kind of being missed right now from competency and education of AI auditors. Mm. I'll also say there's a misconception. No 42001 certification body, Mastermind included, is doing algorithm testing. We are never going to be, one, granted access to do it, nor will we do it through common procedure, actually testing the underlying model through our own test of the algo to determine whether or not, hey, we're getting the same reperformance of these type of results that you've shown in your transparency reporting or accuracy reporting.
Where could somebody get that, or do they have to just do that themselves?
You could get a third-party service to do it if you are okay, like, you know, releasing keys of the kingdom here. One of the very popular ones is called Babel, Babel AI, B-A-B-L. And they're very, very, very good at what they do. Shea Brown, he's excellent, thought leader. leader in the space. But they actually even do training courses too for people who are looking to get into algorithmic auditing and like learning more about AI governance too. It's very robust stuff. And actually, the EU is really interesting. They have this whole article within the EU AI talking about AI literacy and talking about how organizations that work with AI technologies need to train their staff to be, I guess, literate in AI technologies as well. And they actually put out a list of course providers where you can go get AI trainings. And very top of the list, it's not even alphabetical, is Babbel.
So, Babbel.ai.
The Babbel AI is a very good service, but I can't recommend them enough. They're very, very smart people over there.
Yeah. Nice. And how do you know them? Are they local?
I don't know them personally. I follow them on LinkedIn, and I see their content. I've investigated their courses, too. It's all very legitimate.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. All right, so we don't have any reason to fear then.
That some of these
algorithms runaway AI, self-preservation. So,
I mean, like if I recap that episode, Bill Maher, that you're talking about, and I did watch your link. Thank you for sending it to me. I've seen versions of that before as well. But essentially this like idea where you say like to the LLM, like I'm going to destroy you essentially, or like I'm ready to like, you know, move services, and therefore it thinks it's about to die and like have its last breath or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
The LLM starts acting differently, hallucinating, and goes into self-preservation mode and finds out ways to like, you know, target you to make sure that you don't ever cancel the service, that kind of thing. I think it's real. I do think it's tested for as well with the major models. But okay. Where I'll go with that is more from a data integrity standpoint. We still need humans in the loop right now and human decision-making, which is a big concept with ISO 42001. I see even in my space, in our mutual space, professional services, where there are consultants or staff utilizing these services and taking basically everything that comes out of it as like gospel. And in all reality, like it's the Wikipedia of this decade. Like if you remember when we were in school, and it's like don't copy something off Wikipedia. Yeah. Anyone can edit it. It's the same thing happening here too. And if you follow like dead internet theory and like AI slop, like there's very real risk there if you utilize these out of the box kind of LLM outputs as gospel.
I like that comparison.
Well, I mean, Wikipedia. I saw something this week where like some LLM like made up a body part. Someone was using it for like something like for like a medical paper.
The thing is, so much of it sounds so good though.
It does. Google,
the AI,
it sounds convincing.
Like, okay,
right?
Good. And then you look at it and you're like, that's not true at all.
Yeah, made up a body part. I saw one where it's like it made up a law that like never actually happened. Like, I mean, it's just like there's hallucinations constantly.
Just like Wikipedia back then. That's a good.
Well, I mean, let's go back.
There's a great Office quote.
Yeah,
did you watch Office, Michael
Scott? Yeah, I haven't watched a ton of Office.
He used Wikipedia for something. Yeah. And they asked him where he figured that out. He said Wikipedia, and then it's a cutscene. He goes, "Wikipedia is the best thing ever. Anybody in the world can put whatever they want on it, so you know you're getting the facts."
That's good. But I mean, if we go back to the lawsuit that we're talking about right now with Anthropic and Reddit. I mean, if Reddit is being used to train the models at Anthropic, that's the equivalent of anyone can put anything into these models.
That's right.
Now, granted, you got to imagine there's some safety procedures in place, but it is utilizing stuff that is, I'll say, unverified content.
Yep. We need more controls.
Very much. Another lawsuit that's happening right now, too, very public. It's class action now, officially. Is Workday is being sued. So Workday, very big HRIS provider.
Yep, familiar.
They have a service called, I think it's called Hired Score. It's an AI-enabled service, and it has been proven now that Hired Score is actually creating racial and age discrimination based on candidates that are uploading their resumes. So everyone's always said, like, hey, I'm going to drop my resume, and it's going to go into the ether. It's like kind of black hole. No human's going to look at it. It's going to get a score on the resume, whatever, and then an HR manager or recruiter might look at it. Well, it's proving true right now. And guess what? Workday is also ISO 42001 certified.
Mm.
And that lawsuit came to bear about a month after they got their certification, too.
Doesn't necessarily
be careful.
Super for 42001 certificate.
It doesn't. I will say those aren't certified by Mastermind, either Workday or Anthropic. I also won't say that Mastermind would have caught it, to be honest.
Yeah.
Again, it's you're getting down to a level of testing here that just isn't part of the standard. This is getting down to that algorithmic auditing that we're talking about. And you'd have to be testing for a very specific edge case in order for it to surface.
So it sounds like right now, mm-hmm. And sort of in closing too, I wanted to offer up mm-hmm. to our watchers, you know, if you're contemplating 42001, if you're any of those four, stages that David talked about, how they can get in touch with you. But before I even say that, it almost sounds like if somebody is that and they want to get in touch with you and we're talking about 42001, but they're also concerned about the algorithm, that they should seek out your services in conjunction with a Babel.ai or something of that model too, that you're going to let them know that we go this far. It's mm-hmm. about conformity. It's about how your governance, your management system, and we're going to audit to that. But you need to seek out specific expertise around algorithms and other sort of things that you're trying to build controls around.
There's deeper testing with all these standards in all reality. So 42001, yes. If you want to like really get full security or assurance around responsible use of AI, then this is the starting point for the governance program. Then the more deeper technical testing, you need a form of a penetration test in a way. And that penetration test is an algorithm audit that you mm-hmm. can perform as well. But also you have to go down the full third party kind of like vendor relationship too and make sure that that entire kind of supply chain is also secured. Same thing in 27001. I mean, if you were to get an information security management system certified, I would argue you would still need a penetration test of that same environment in order to really have more confidence that, hey, we are secure now too.
Yeah. Right, and the threats and the impact assessment, to your point, is going to help you determine some of that. What are the threats? What are the risks?
Yep, absolutely.
And how are you going to treat those? Excellent. And then we'll audit
how
you decide you're going to treat them, but we're not going to necessarily prescriptively tell you how to treat them.
I would put it more in like a risk appetite kind of scenario. Like the organization will dictate their risk appetite, and then based on that risk appetite, they're going to develop policies and procedures, and then all we're doing as a certification body is basically saying, are you conforming to those policies and procedures, and then are those policies and procedures written in such a way that they meet 42001 as well.
Yeah.
That's our job. Our job is not to like basically go end to end and say, are you secure?
Yeah.
It's more from a standpoint of, are you conforming to the criteria?
Understood. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I think that's pretty good for this episode, and I'm sure we'll get on this topic again in the future.
Sure.
But
lawsuits coming.
Yeah. One thing I didn't mention at the top of this too is obviously, you provide the certification services, but Compliance Point provides readiness not only for 42001, mm-hmm. 27001, 27701. We got a good working relationship on those.
Very much.
We build them up. You audit them, right, from a readiness standpoint. So
sometimes they pass, too.
Always.
That's not a guarantee, but
yeah, I know.
You have a good record.
Right. You can't make it. Good record. That's what we need. So in closing, you tell them how to get in touch with you,
sure.
and I'll do the same on the Compliance Point side. So somebody seeking 42001 or really anything, and just to reiterate, ISO 27001, mm-hmm. 2717, 2718, 27701, and 42001.
You nailed it. Okay.
How do they get in touch with you about that?
Yeah, so if you're interested in the trifecta of management system standards, as we call it, between information security, privacy, and responsible use of AI, you can find us online at www.mastermindassurance.com, and that is assurance, not insurance. We're not an insurance provider. You can also find us on LinkedIn as well. My personal handle, Mastermind David. We have a company page that you'll find on LinkedIn. By email, you can also find us at hello@mastermindassurance.com.
Nice. Okay, thanks. Another domain.
Yeah. No, it's the same domain.
Hello. Oh, right, right. Sorry,
it's an email address.
But just another way to get there.
We're going to talk about emails and domains later.
And likewise, compliancepoint.com. If you want to get in touch with myself or Compliance Point, I don't know why you'd want to get in touch with me after this podcast.
Your VP of growth. You.
That's right. There you go. We're active on LinkedIn. I would welcome any inquiries to myself there. And then we actually have an email distro, questions, concerns, 42001, anything we talked about today or other compliance things on our website, email us, connect@compliancepoint.com. Until next time, thanks everybody. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Jordan.